From Beyond the Beltway, this is Bruce Dumont with our weekly analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, professors, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight, featuring commentary by Professor Paul Post of the University of Chicago, Jennifer Lind, an instructor at the University of Chicago, businessman and consultant Chris Roebling, and a visit from Vivek Ramaswamy, who is seeking the Republican nomination for President of the United States. Now, we all know that President Joe Biden announced officially that he is seeking re-election. We've, kicked that story around for the last several months, and we're going to be kicking it around for another at least year on this program. So we're not going to talk too much about the president tonight, other than a commitment that he has made and previous presidents have made that should China try to muscle their way into Taiwan and take over Taiwan, the United States would be there to protect Taiwan. Now, a number of presidents, Republicans and Democrats, have sent this message out. It drives China crazy. They hate when they hear people talking about it. They don't even want our leaders to have any communication at all with anyone from Taiwan. And yet the question I ask is, if it comes to the day when China does something involving Taiwan, what's the American response going to be? Are young men going to go out and march and fight in this war? Are their parents going to march and say, no, this is not a good idea? And I would say that the average American doesn't know too much about Taiwan, doesn't know about any treaties, doesn't know anything about that whole region of the world. And so tonight, for the next 2 hours, we are very blessed by having people who know something about the area. And we're going to begin. Chris Roebling and Jennifer Lind are joining us. But I want to begin with Paul Post from the University of Chicago, associate professor. Paul, you have studied and written a lot on this subject. So let me ask the basic $64 question, for American voters who are listening tonight. What's so special about Taiwan, and what is so special about our commitment to them?
Well, first of all, Bruce, thank you for having me on the show again. It's always a pleasure to be on the show. That's a great question. And it's a question I think a lot of Americans are asking, especially in the context of the current war in Ukraine, because you do hear people asking that same question regarding Ukraine. What is our interest there? Why are we involved there? When it comes to Taiwan, it is very much a complicated relationship, starting with the fact that the U.S., up until the early 1970s, very much was aligned with Taiwan. And in fact, Taiwan, or at least we could say the government that sits in Taipei, was actually the UN National Security Council representative, with the seat that is now, of course, held by the government that sits in Beijing. And the U.S. recognized it as such. Ever since then, since the 1970s, the U.S. has had official diplomatic ties with the People's Republic of China, the government that sits in Beijing, but has maintained support and has not officially declared them an independent nation, but has maintained support to the government that sits in Taipei. And so we have this very ambiguous relationship with them. But the reason why we do this is a key reason is the government that sits in Taipei is a democracy. And that stands very much in contrast to, of course, the communist and autocratic government that sits in Beijing. And so that's one key reason. It's also an advanced economy. The U.S. has a lot of economic ties to Taiwan, and so those are two key reasons for this.
Just one other point. I want to just jump into here others' response as well. Chris Roebling, you are an international businessman consultant. You're a Republican, not by birth, but by decisions in life. What would you add to Professor Post's description of Taiwan and its importance to the United States?
Well, I'm sure Professor, who knows a lot more about this stuff than I do, was about to say that this is a key element in U.S. Influence and power in the Western Pacific, and that Taiwan and our commitment to Taiwan is intimately related to our commitment, say, to South Korea, our commitment to Japan, to the Philippines, and to our own economic interests and those of the entire free world to have sea lanes of communication through the East China Sea. So there are both the sort of democratic and historical reasons that the professor mentioned, the economic reasons, which, by the way, weigh heavily, I think, against China, the People's Republic of China, invading the Republic of China, ROC, because they're so intimately involved with each other's economies.
I want to, Chris, one second. I want to bring Jennifer Lind into the conversation, so we've engaged everybody.
Sure.
Jennifer, you've done a lot of study on this issue as well. What are other things that listeners and viewers should know about Taiwan, where it is, how much of a military support do they have, and where do they stand in the world?
Well, thank you for having me on. And, you know, there are so many perspectives, both from history and economics today, that we could bring into this or look at it through. I would just add to these points that this tiny island of Taiwan has really created for itself an outsized role in the global economy with the semiconductor industry that we could look at it from so many different perspectives. But whether or not we actually would go to war over Taiwan, I don't know if how much of that is based on sort of logic and strategy or how much that's based on sort of a sense of nationalism and politics by those who are leaders, both elected and appointed.
Mm-hmm. Now, Paul, I want you to follow up on that as to whether or not what legal grounds do we have? Is it how strong is the relationship? Because we have a unique situation where we do not recognize Taiwan diplomatically, and yet we hear about this military agreement that exists that we are to be ready to defend them if they are attacked by China. So when we come back, we're going to go to a break right now. When we come back, I'd like you to talk a little bit more about that, and I'd also like to talk about what military strength, if any, does Taiwan have to protect itself. And we'll talk about that when we come back. 1-800-723-8289 is the phone number. 1-800-723-8289. We'll also be talking about Russia and Ukraine as the program unfolds this evening. Talking about foreign policy, waiting for your reaction. I'm Bruce Dumont. Thanks for joining us tonight.
Jersey Mike's, you can elevate any sub by getting the juice. Red wine, vinegar, and an olive oil blend. It's how a Jersey Mike's sub gets its exquisite zing and how bites get boosted. The juice adds a certain something extra, an exclamation on top of the freshly sliced meats and toppings. The kind of exclamation you can eat. Order Jersey Mike's subs on our mobile app and get delivery right to your home or pick up from your nearest Jersey Mike's sub location. Jersey Mike's, be a sub above.
Going back to school as a working adult doesn't mean you have to sacrifice a high-quality education. Purdue University, a top 10 public university, took its innovative thinking to a new level when it created Purdue University Global for working adults. Discover innovative, practical ways to earn your degree online and advance your career. Purdue Global has already awarded more than 1 million credits for prior learning, which means you can save nearly half the cost of your bachelor's. See how close you are to finishing your degree at purdueglobal.edu. That's purdueglobal.edu.
If you talk, they will hear you.
We all want our kids to grow up safe and healthy. So we show them how. And we tell them, with honest conversations that let them know what we expect. Not just one time, but every chance we get. That's especially important when it comes to alcohol and other drugs. Kids not only need to know the dangers and how to avoid them, they need to hear it often from you. And when it comes to pain medications, opioids, they need to know that they should never be taken without a prescription and never shared with friends or family. It's dangerous and illegal. So talk with your kids and guide them through the challenges of growing up safe and healthy. Because when you talk, they hear you. For more information about talking with your kids about underage use of alcohol and other drugs, visit underagedrinking.samhsa.gov. So talk, they hear you. You
can do it if you try. This is the story of a very special woman. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician or an entrepreneur. Her knowledge was limitless and still is. She could also make monsters disappear, especially those that lurked in the shadows under the bed. Once, this woman put back together a teenage girl's broken heart, which had been shattered in a thousand pieces, just by giving her a bear hug. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
We continue, and Paul Post from the University of Chicago is one of our guests. And, Paul, I asked you before the break, what about the ability of Taiwan to protect itself? What sort of military strength do they have? Because many in the world and many in the United States, as you say, you know, they're comparing this to Russia and Ukraine. And I think a lot of people are sort of stupefied that Ukraine has done very well. Obviously, they got a lot of support from all over the world, but they're doing pretty well in defending themselves and demonstrating that they will fight for their country. Do we know if we have any similar situation in Taiwan?
It's a great question, and it is the big question. And I think the first thing when it comes to doing a catalog, if you will, of the military capabilities of Taiwan, the first thing to keep in mind is the geographic factor, which is that for China to actually invade Taiwan, it would require going across about 100-mile strait. And that is not a trivial operation for any military. You can think about the difficulties of crossing the English Channel, and that's 12 miles. Uh-huh. So that's the biggest thing they have going for them. Now, what they also have is, of course, a lot of artillery, anti-aircraft missiles, and indeed, just recently, the U.S. Congress has approved additional weaponry going to Taiwan for those purposes of kind of defending the land from any type of amphibious assault. Of course, that doesn't mean that China couldn't also try some sort of air assault or bombardment. But in terms of invading in the way that, say, Russia's invaded Ukraine, that would be a very logistically difficult feat, even under the best of circumstances for the PRC. And that's one key thing that differentiates Taiwan from, say, Ukraine.
Okay. Jennifer, tell us more about that region of the world. Obviously, you've got China, you've got Taiwan, you talk about, 100 miles there, but there's a lot of other elements, and there's a lot of other military, U.S. military hardware in that region of the world.
Right. The U.S. has 9 bases in the Philippines, and, of course, Guam is a U.S. territory. We have bases in Japan. And when we look at the map, it's enormous, right, the Pacific. And while it's 100 miles from mainland China, which, as Professor Post said, is an enormous challenge to launch an invasion, maybe not launch an invasion, but certainly to occupy over the ocean. However, it's 6,000 miles from San Francisco. So to to think of the U.S. launching a war to defend Taiwan, it is, you know, a glance at the map would not work in Taiwan's favor. Mm-hmm. The other thing is, and Professor Post is an expert on alliances, so he could shed light here, but my understanding is the idea that we are obliged to defend Taiwan is tenuous at best. I think the relationship in terms of our defense obligations of Taiwan is very vague. You know, President Carter said Taiwan is part of China. There's one China. We have this one China policy. But then when Taiwan had its first democratic elections, I think it was 1996, we started to we wanted to sort of do this dance mm-hmm. and navigate a tightrope. Mm-hmm. So we would like to sort of really befriended China, brought them in through the WTO, uh-huh. et cetera.
Okay.
But the idea that we're committed to defending Taiwan, I'm not so sure that's quite clear cut.
Chris Roebling, do you agree with that? And also, what would you add to the geographic region that we would be talking about and focusing on if China and Taiwan were to engage each other?
Well, it's as Jennifer says, it's far away. But as she also points out, we have assets in that region and we do have allies. And I think the key here is not U.S. versus China over Taiwan. I think the key here is that a growing number of democracies and indeed other countries in the Asia-Pacific region are very deeply concerned about Chinese aggrandizement. And this would be seen as their, you know, a very big step for China. There's no question that, you know, when the island of Taiwan is indeed 100 miles off of the coast of mainland China, that it's tough for China, which doesn't have a tremendous record as an offensive military power, has a pretty decent record collapsing under attacks from others. Not that we should have started attacking China.
Guys, and this is for everybody. Is there any reason other than its territory that they think rightfully is theirs? Is there any reason why they need Taiwan for anything? Professor Post, start with you.
This is something that perplexes people. Is they go, why? What is it about Taiwan that, you know, to put it back in the terminology I was using earlier, why would the government sitting in Beijing, why are they so obsessed with having control over the territory that's under the provision of the government in Taipei? And this is something that, first of all, you could make the case that there are some geostrategic benefits. They would have more control of the strait. They would have more control of the East China Sea. There's, you know, you could make that argument. You can make arguments about them having control of the semiconductor industry there. There's some value to that. But, and I think this is something we've seen with Ukraine. You can't underestimate the power of nationalism. You can't underestimate the power of the ideas of certain territory belonging and kind of playing up this kind of view of patriotism or nationalism that is predicated on the idea that certain territory, certain land belongs to your people. And that's something that I think is a power that a lot of times we kind of say, really, is that? But I think if we look at what's happening in Ukraine and Russia, we can see that in effect. That's a major driver for why Russia invaded mm-hmm. Ukraine with this belief, this nationalism. So I don't think that that can be discounted. In many ways, that's the key reason why they feel like they must have control of that island.
I agree,
Jennifer,
wholeheartedly with Paul.
Just
with
one second,
Professor
Jennifer,
Post.
Then back to you, Chris.
You know, and that term nationalism really is key here. I think it gets to the essence of the issue. Benedict Anderson is a historian who writes a lot about this topic, and he often refers to the U.S., the sense of what sort of our nationalism. He refers to something called the logo map, that we in the United States, we think of ourselves as this 48, the Continental 48, a magnet on your car. The United States is the Continental 48. But the world looks at us as a global empire with remnants of imperialism and colonialism from U.S. colonies. And I think to see it in that perspective, Chinese nationalism is absolutely at the heart of this issue. Every U.S. kid grows up learning the terms American exceptionalism and manifest destiny, and that order matters. Every Chinese national, every Chinese kid learns the term century of humiliation. They see the world as they were humiliated over 100 years by Western powers and Japan, and they're determined not to let that happen again. And whether or not China has or Taiwan has a strong economy of these semiconductors, et cetera, or not, they don't want to be humiliated by the West again.
Chris Roebling, you're trying to get in. Go ahead.
I think the geostrategic calculus that is at work here is the same in Ukraine, the same in Moscow with respect to Ukraine as it is in Beijing with respect to Taiwan. Whatever you think of President Biden, and you might think he's a great guy, you might think he's a great president, you might think he's a terrible weak president, regardless, it's quite obvious that Moscow in the Ukraine is testing the West, and Beijing with Taiwan, should it go, is testing the West. And I think we should see these, to pick up on Jennifer's point about the so-called century of humiliation, much of which was brought on by China to China, but leave that issue aside for the moment. What we're really dealing with here are two aggressive states and two aggressive powers led by unaccountable autocrats, and they are seeking to strengthen their hold on a lot of different economic and political elements in the mix. And that is why Putin decided to ignore the fact that Russia actually descends from the Kievan Rus, and that is why Xi is about to ignore the fact that that Beijing's government has never controlled Taiwan. Taiwan was a part of China in an era that the Chinese Communist Party explicitly repudiates on the basis that Jennifer was just mentioning about so-called global.
So there is no, just to make sure I'm understanding, there is no population within China that wants to relive the good old days when Taiwan was part of the mainland. Those people are dead and gone?
They're already getting all those benefits from the interrelationship. Mm-hmm. The single largest trading partner of China, I'm sorry, of Taiwan, is the People's Republic of China. and Taiwan would be the largest trading partner of the People's Republic if it was bigger, but it's already well beyond its proportional status.
And vice versa is true. There are generations in Taiwan who've never been to mainland China. Who in no way define themselves or identify as Chinese. They're Taiwanese.
Yeah. A question about the politics of it. If, Chris, you said that because of the perceived weakness of President Biden in a variety of areas.
No. I didn't say that. I said we've got autocrats who are testing. I said, whether you like Biden or not.
I think
he's weak, but
I put
others
it
might not.
Here's my question.
Okay.
If Biden, in fact, this is going to be for everybody to sort of think about. If Biden is perceived to be weak, then even though you may not have said those exact words, I think that's what you meant, and others on the panel may agree with that. If Biden is perceived to be weak, is there some reason to believe that China would act sooner than later on their desires for Taiwan, knowing that we have a presidential election coming up next year, and it's possible that a new president of the United States would be perceived to be a lot stronger than Joe Biden, and thus put the kibosh on China's idea? That's the idea. I want to get everybody to react to the politics of it all, and we'll reintroduce our guests and have some comments to make about our program when we return. I'm Bruce Dumont from coast to coast and border to border and around the world, even in Taipei. You're listening to Beyond the Beltway.
Goodbye, bench press. Adios, squat rack. Fare thee well, kettlebell.
Hey, Kellen, need a spot?
No, Jake from State Farm. I'm just saying goodbye to my pricey gym membership.
What? Don't give up what you love. State Farm has options like insuring your home and ride with great rates on both.
Nice. Hey, can I buy you a protein shake or a granola bar? Or...
For surprisingly great rates, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Call or go to statefarm.com for a quote today.
Going back to school as a working adult doesn't mean you have to sacrifice a high-quality education. Purdue University, a top 10 public university, took its innovative thinking to a new level when it created Purdue University Global for working adults. Discover innovative, practical ways to earn your degree online and advance your career. Purdue Global has already awarded more than 1 million credits for prior learning, which means you can save nearly half the cost of your bachelor's. See how close you are to finishing your degree at purdueglobal.edu. That's purdueglobal.edu.
When it comes to vaping, the truth can get clouded. So let's make it clear. Vaping is not safe for kids, teens, or young adults. It's just not.
Because vaping can put microscopic particles into your lungs.
And dangerous things like metals and volatile organic compounds into your body.
And nicotine, the same highly addictive substance found in regular cigarettes.
Nicotine can harm a person's brain development through their mid-20s.
Affecting learning, memory, attention, and impulse control, and priming the brain for other addictions.
Vaping products also come in kid-friendly flavors that can make them appealing to youth.
And many kids also use other drugs, like marijuana, in vaping devices.
With appealing flavors, high nicotine levels, and lots of promotion on social media,
many kids think vaping is harmless, but it's not.
So talk to your kids about the risks of vaping, because when you talk, they hear you.
For more information, visit underagedrinking.samhsa.gov.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably? It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Oh, I have a cramp. I can probably hit the green from here. Probably. Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Tonight's edition of Beyond the Beltway is a recorded edition of our program based on a recent broadcast from a couple of weeks back, and we will be back to that conversation about the U.S. foreign policy and China and Taiwan. But first, we're going to take a moment or to present to you a snapshot interview that I was able to do recently with Vivek Ramaswamy, who is the Republican candidate for President of the United States as the nomination. He's a multimillionaire tech genius seeking that Republican nomination. He's gotten some press on the national level, including he was on Meet the Press a couple of weeks ago. He was attending a GOP town hall meeting on Chicago's South Side, and we caught up with him not too far after he gave his town hall responses, which you will also hear. But we asked him about his position on China, and also this is what he had to say.
As president, what would your position be on China and U.S. relations with China?
Declare independence. Full stop. So I think that we're too dependent on our enemy for our modern way of life. And you know what? We never depended on the Soviet Union for the shoes on our feet or the phones in our pockets. We shouldn't depend on our enemy today for our modern way of life.
Should cut off all imports from China?
I would, but unless the CCP reforms or falls. And so what I would say is, they're actually in a weaker spot than we realize. Because Xi Jinping shot himself in the foot last year, holding on to an unprecedented third term of power, right? So if we show up and say, we're pulling out, we're declaring independence, unless you stop the theft, unless you stop the practices in which ways you treat businesses as political pawns, then we're out. What he's going to say is then they have to reform, because they're in a weaker spot than we are.
And one thing on TikTok.
Position on TikTok is, if you can't smoke a cigarette by the age of 18, You shouldn't be using TikTok at the age of 14 or 15 either. I'd ban addictive social media under the age of 16. Full stop. If it's with algorithms. Social media, algorithm-based social media banned under age 16, just like cigarettes are under age 18.
And what kind of haircut are you getting today?
Well, I'm getting a clean up around the sides, but I'm in talented hands. So I appreciate that. Maybe some lines at the end. A little fade with some lines.
They got to put a little gray in your hair?
I think the presidential race is doing that automatically.
You're listening to an interview with Vivek Ramaswamy, who is running for the Republican presidential nomination. He was in Chicago recently on the South Side. And I asked him, how would he deal with the migrants' rush on the U.S.-Mexican border?
I'm here for two reasons. Number one is, I'm running for president. I can't occupy that office sooner than January 20th, 2025. I want to figure out what I'm doing on the first day. Second thing is, there's things people can do in the meantime. You don't have to be the president to drive change. It's like what you said, Tyrone, is I have lived the full American dream. I want to get a sense for how we can start making a difference now. But you asked about when I take office. So, look, it's pretty simple as I look at it. You got a faucet, you got a sink that's too full, right? One of the things you got to do is, first, you got a full sink. You got to figure out how to actually take people who did not come to this country legally and in as humane and respectful of a manner as possible, respecting their humanity, still respect the law. And they have to follow the same process that everybody else did, get in line and come through the front door. And then we fix that process of how you come in through the front door, because we do need workers in this country. But we can't have people whose first act of entering the country breaks the law. I don't talk about building some wall. It was a slogan. It didn't mean anything. However, we have a few hundred thousand people in our military who are hungry to serve this country. There's probably no better way you can protect Americans on American soil than to use that military to close the Swiss cheese of a southern border that we have right now. It just makes all the sense in the world. And it's not, it's, you know, think about 200 people dying a day, including in Chicago, of fentanyl-related poisoning and overdoses, not to mention the other illegal drugs. Most of that is crossing our southern border. We can actually fix that. So I think it's two prongs. Is one is you close and turn off the faucet. The other is you drain the water that's already accumulated in the sink as humane of a manner as possible. You take those people, move them to where they came from. And for the people who are willing to come legally, follow the rules, actually make contributions, you have a legal process to get them in. Now, let's talk about the money. I'm told it's about $7,000 a month per migrant that's sitting here in Chicago. You want to talk about cutting checks? That's a check we're cutting right now. Remember we had a baby formula shortage in this country?
Yes.
Yeah.
You know how hard it is to now buy a pair of sneakers for your kid on the back of inflation? A lot harder than it was even 3 years ago. Well, there's baby formula and sneakers being provided to people whose first act of entering this country broke the law with no questions asked. Something's not right there. Right? What do we say? We're a nation built on the rule of law. We will put someone in jail for possession of antiquated marijuana laws over the course of the last 20 years, and then pay more than $7,000 a person a month to host them in prison.
Yeah.
But now we're just cutting that check, claiming to be a nation built on the rule of law, to people whose literal first act of entering this country broke the law.
Right.
While we leave, the Americans, and that's the way I see it, just to be honest with you guys, the Americans, I don't care. Your skin color, my skin color, your skin color. The Americans who work hard and actually follow the rules, pay their taxes, live in this country, live in our communities in this country, live in communities like the one we're here today without giving a second care. That's wrong. That's not right. That's not what it means to put Americans first. And so I think that that's part of the solution too, is not just how you fix the illegal immigration, but take the way you're taking care of the migrants is almost a model to say that we actually can do it. We're just not taking care of actual Americans here at home
exactly.
who are already born here and following the rule of law. So that's where I'm at on that.
In the conversation with Vivek Ramaswamy that we had, it was before a small group of predominantly blacks, Republicans, in the Chicagoland area on the south side. And they had lots to say on the issue of illegal immigration, not very popular an issue with this group. But I asked Vivek, are there too many incentives for illegal immigrants?
I'm going to give you a businessman's answer. I'm barely a politician. I've been a politician for 3 months, okay? But before that, I had over a decade as a businessman. Here's what I learned. You give people incentives, they respond to those incentives. So you tell people that you have an open border and you're going to give them and spend $7,000 a month, do the math on that, $84,000 a year.
I'm coming.
They're going to say, I'm coming.
I'm going. I'm going back and coming.
Yeah, why not? Right? You'd be better off that way. You'd actually be better off that way. So human beings respond to incentives. So I think about this pretty simply. What do we want people to do? We want people, say at the border, to follow the law. Well, here's a simple solution. Stop paying people to break the law. That's simple. Now, we want to get to some root cause. I'll share with you my opinion. You don't have to all agree with me. But I think I'm going to say some things that I think are good. Good in the country. Good in life. They've been good to me, at least. So maybe it's not true for everybody. It's true for me. Having a family is good. Working is good. I think having children and bringing children into this world is good. Why are we paying people not to do those things instead of to do those things? Think about it. So the $7,700 a month that is being spent on a migrant for breaking the law, how about just redirecting that? I'm not trying to talk about conveying money from thin air. This is money that we're already spending, right? And then you really want to open up some money, take that $100 billion back from Ukraine.
Okay.
Now we're talking real money. Then you talk about the $20,000 extra that we're spending per student in Chicago public schools. When, by the way, the charter school that have better results are only spending $20,000. Now we've got a lot of money to play with here. Why don't we give that to the people who, or give them an incentive, right, to all people to do the things that we say are good? Get married, have a kid, work. And don't just get work for the low wage you're getting. You get a reward for doing all of those things too. So I think that there is no one root cause. I think Tyrone is right about that. And complicated problems. I think there's a temptation amongst politicians to try to make a silver bullet to a complicated problem, because that makes it easy, right? Then you get a little slogan, then you make a little sign, then you raise some money, then you try to get elected. I think there is no silver bullet. You're right about that, Tyrone. But we, just right now, I was hearing your response. I think we agree there are some root causes that we can address. And what my contribution to this, I think, is going to be, I'm just going to tell you what I know. I haven't been in Congress. I don't know how it works in terms of making laws in the federal government. It's pretty broken as I see it. But as a businessman, I mean, people do often what they're paid to do. We're paying them to do the wrong things, to cross borders, to do the kinds of things that we don't want them to be doing. Start paying people to do the kinds of things that we do as a society want everyone to be doing. And I think that's got to be the first step to get into a better place. And we have a plenty big pot of money to play with if we stop spending on pointless wars somewhere else, on prisons, on illegal immigrants getting $84,000 a year. It's not like we lack the money to do it.
Well, that's our snapshot look at Vivek Ramaswamy, who was seeking the Republican nomination for President of the United States. He was in Chicago recently on the South Side addressing a predominantly black audience. And when we return to Beyond the Beltway, we will continue with our conversation about China and Taiwan. That features Professor Paul Post from the University of Chicago, Jennifer Lind, an instructor at the UFC, and international businessman and consultant Chris Roblin. And remember, this program tonight is a recorded edition of Beyond the Beltway.
Going back to school as a working adult doesn't mean you have to sacrifice a high-quality education. Purdue University, a top 10 public university, took its innovative thinking to a new level when it created Purdue University Global for working adults. Discover innovative, practical ways to earn your degree online and advance your career. Purdue Global has already awarded more than 1 million credits for prior learning, which means you can save nearly half the cost of your bachelor's. See how close you are to finishing your degree at purdueglobal.edu. That's purdueglobal.edu.
At Jersey Mike's, you can elevate any sub by getting the juice. Red wine, vinegar, and an olive oil blend. It's how a Jersey Mike's sub gets its exquisite zing and how bites get boosted. The juice adds a certain something extra, an exclamation on top of the freshly sliced meats and toppings, the kind of exclamation you can eat. Order Jersey Mike's subs on our mobile app and get delivery right to your home or pick up from your nearest Jersey Mike's sub location. Jersey Mike's, be a sub above.
One in three adults has prediabetes. One in three. That means it could be you, your football buddy, your football buddy, or you, your best man, your worst man, you, your dog walker, your cat jogger. While one in three adults has prediabetes, with early diagnosis, prediabetes can be reversed. Take the risk test at doihaveprediabetes.org. That's doihaveprediabetes.org.
Wait, did they just say one in three adults has prediabetes? That's 33.33333% of adults. That means it could be me, my boss, or my boss's boss, or me, my favorite sister, or my other sister. That's seven members of my 21-person romantic book club. Wait, the one in three could be me, my karaoke partner Carol, or my karaoke enemy Jeff. I'm going to take the risk test at doihaveprediabetes.org.
Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
Matthew.
Huh? Oh, sorry.
It's okay. I just need you to listen to me.
I know that a lot of times, Mom, it might not seem like I'm listening to you, but I am. I hear you. And what you say really does matter to me.
I mean, let's be honest. No kid likes rules, but I get why we have them. I hear you, and I know it's because you care.
All the talks we've had over the years, including what you've told me about not using alcohol and other drugs, they stick with me. And believe it or not, they really do make a difference, especially at times that matter most.
Hey, want a drink?
No, thanks, I'm good. So thank you, Dad, for talking and preparing me for what's ahead.
Thanks, Mom, for never giving up and always being my biggest fan.
Thank you for letting me know what you expect, so I can try to meet your expectations.
Thank you for talking.
For more information about talking with your kids about underage use of alcohol and other drugs, visit underagedrinking.samhsa.gov.
Bruce Dumont Beck, we do have a telephone caller on the line. Let's bring her in as well. Joy, listening to us in Spokane, Washington. Go ahead, Joy.
Oh, hi. I had a question for your guest.
Yes.
In Spokane, there's a number of more extreme right radio stations. And one of the things they talk about over and over is Biden's crime family and how he is so strongly compromised by his family's relationship with China. And I was just wondering to what extent there is something behind that, or if there's not anything. My tendency is to say, oh, it's just a conspiracy theory, but I don't think that is necessarily the total answer.
Okay. Well,
just wondering what you all know.
Stay on the line because we have a card-carrying Republican, we have a card-carrying Democrat, and then we have someone in the middle. So I'm going to start with our card-carrying Republican, Chris Roebling. What do you make of all of the media coverage, and there's been significant media coverage, of primarily in conservative media, about Joe Biden, the Biden family, and China? Are you worried?
Well, yeah, I'm not crazy about what we know so far and what is not contested so far, but I don't think the entire story has been told. I think the Biden administration and its Justice Department have done everything they can to obscure the real story. But be that as it may, I don't think we should go jumping to conclusions about Trump or Biden or Jimmy Carter or the next president, whoever he or she may be.
Professor Post, your response. Are you worried about that relationship?
I'm not worried about that relationship. And the reason why I'm not worried about that relationship, and this goes back to even the earlier conversation that we could be having, is Biden has made very clear his stance, to the point to where they've had to walk back his statements, right? He's made very clear his stance in terms of how he views the U.S. commitment to Taiwan. And if you were to say he had these extreme business interest in not wanting to do that, well, he's doing behavior publicly that would go the exact opposite of that. So that would be something that would lead me to say, even if there is a there with some of those claims, which I don't think there's much of one, his behavior suggests that it's not something that would in any way compromise his views on this issue.
Well, let's hear from the Democrat, Jennifer Lind. Nutrier County Democrats.
I have not seen news reports or listened to the radio shows that the caller's referring to, but I'm not worried about it. I was more worried about our 45th president, global financial interests from golf courses in Scotland to real estate in the Middle East.
Are you worried about Hunter Biden and what you've learned about Hunter Biden? By the way, I mentioned it's Nutrier Democrats, not Nutrier County. There's no Nutrier County.
That's okay. And it's Nutrier Township also, and it is Nutrier Democrats in the Nutrier Township 9th District with Jan Schakowsky. I don't know enough about it, but I'm always open to learning more.
Why do you not know much about it? You're very bright. You're investigative.
Yes,
you're
that's
an instructor.
True. Well,
it's been in the news. How come you're not more interested in it?
Well, I do tend to focus more on all things international, and I do think it's worthwhile to.
Don't you think that's potentially international?
Of course,
I mean,
it
if the son of the Vice President of the United States and now the President of the United States is flying around the world and being introduced as the president's son. I mean, don't you think there's a potential conflict there?
Yes, of course, especially in Ukraine, if that's what we're thinking about, Hunter Biden. So It's important that those investigations are ongoing for sure, while Biden's in the White House and beyond.
Okay. I want to go back to Paul. Paul, the last time you were on this program or a previous time, you had some unkind things to say about Tucker Carlson. He is now out at Fox. Your dislike for Tucker Carlson was it what he said or the way he said it? Because he raised questions that few people in the media raise. And is that not part of a free society that we need reporters who are aggressive in searching out answers, even if they begin with a bias?
You know, and to be perfectly clear, I'm a big advocate of the right for Tucker Carlson to be able to say what Tucker Carlson wants to say. I have no problem with that. Do I need to listen to Tucker Carlson say those things? Not necessarily. But I'm more than happy if Tucker Carlson wants to have a conversation sometime. I'm more than happy to have a conversation with him. That was kind of my view there. No, I think he is fine to make these comments, but the problem is that, you know, do you only hear from Tucker Carlson? And that's, of course, been one of the big concerns people have had about Tucker Carlson is that, you know, people get just his view. They only listen to him. He's big on entertainment. And, you know, that's a big reason why he was a big draw for Fox. And so people would only listen to him. But, yeah, obviously this past week something interesting happened. And, again, it's outside of my area of expertise. But I will just say that his departure from Fox was very sudden. And I think it raises a lot of questions about what exactly was going on. And I think we also have enough insight now to know that even Tucker Carlson might not agree with everything that Tucker Carlson says in public when he's on his show. So I think that's something that my context.
Chris Roebling, back to you. Your response to the Tucker Carlson firing, and also how significant a figure is he politically in the country, even now?
Well, I think that Fox is, we've got a lot of noise on the line. I think that Fox has very seriously hurt itself in terms of ratings and in terms of its ability to sell ads. And I don't know how it's going to come back from that. I like Tucker Carlson. I think he's a brilliant guy, and I think he's kind of fearless. I think he said, I agreed with a lot of the things he said, not everything that he said. I do recall very distinctly in the period between the election in 2020 and the inauguration, he was furious at Sidney Powell, and he was one of the very few people out there who pointed out she was full of hot air. So how all of this sorts out is up to Lachlan Murdoch and his dad, and not up.
Okay. We do have to pause on that point. Chris Roebling, Paul Post, and Jennifer Lind are joining us tonight. We're talking about foreign policy. 1-800-723-8289. When we come back, we'll continue our discussion, not only of Russia and Ukraine, but also China and Taiwan. And I will ask the question again. Is America ready to support troops on the ground fighting a war over China and Taiwan?
Going back to school as a working adult doesn't mean you have to sacrifice a high-quality education. Purdue University, a top 10 public university, took its innovative thinking to a new level when it created Purdue University Global for working adults. Discover innovative, practical ways to earn your degree online and advance your career. Purdue Global has already awarded more than 1 million credits for prior learning, which means you can save nearly half the cost of your bachelor's. See how close you are to finishing your degree at purdueglobal.edu. That's purdueglobal.edu.
Goodbye, bench press. Adios, squat rack. Fare thee well, kettlebell.
Hey, Kellen, need a spot?
No, Jake from State Farm. I'm just saying goodbye to my pricey gym membership.
What? Don't give up what you love. State Farm has options like insuring your home and ride with great rates on both.
Nice. Hey, can I buy you a protein shake or a granola bar? Or
for surprisingly great rates, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Call or go to statefarm.com for a quote today.
At Jersey Mike's, you can elevate any sub by getting the juice. Red wine, vinegar, and an olive oil blend. It's how a Jersey Mike's sub gets its exquisite zing and how bites get boosted. The juice adds a certain something extra, an exclamation on top of the freshly sliced meats and toppings, the kind of exclamation you can eat. Order Jersey Mike's subs on our mobile app and get delivery right to your home or pick up from your nearest Jersey Mike's sub location. Jersey Mike's, be a sub above.
Is that a faucet running?
That's not a faucet. That's a river rushing through the forest. Forest rivers provide over 100 million people with clean water to drink.
What? I can't hear you because of the vacuum.
That's not a vacuum. That's the trees in the forest cleaning up the air we breathe.
I didn't know the trees were so amazing.
Yep, and the forest gives us shade, trees to climb.
That's awesome. Let's go explore some more.
Visit the forest today and enjoy all it does just for you. To learn more about the forest and find one near you, go to discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Rooster Montbeck, we continue with hour number two of the On the Beltway. Thank you very much for joining us this evening. We're talking about U.S. relations with China as it relates to Taiwan and whether or not we would be protective of Taiwan should the Chinese move on Taipei. And I want to get a question that I've asked a number of times is whether or not the American people would support it. Now, we haven't had people either yes or no tonight calling in and offering their response. So if there is an anti-war movement about it, nobody knows about it. But Jennifer, give us your sense of how the American people would respond if their sons and daughters had to be, marching off to war or engaging in war with China.
In a word, I think they would not support it. I think when we look at when support was widespread for war, it's easy to think that for leaders, elected leaders, it's never popular to oppose a war. Yet, really only on 9/11, when we were attacked on our soil, did we have immediate widespread public and government support. On September 12th, there was only one member of Congress, both houses of Congress, who voted against the authorization for use of military force, and that was Representative Barbara Lee. Right. But that's when we were attacked on our soil. We think back at something like, speaking of Asia, when we look at Pearl Harbor, every kid in America knows December 7th, 1941, right? But in fact, Roosevelt still had to work very hard to get Americans to back his desire to go to war against Germany. 9 hours after the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor, they attacked the Philippines, where there were 16, 17 million people who looked to FDR as their commander-in-chief. It was U.S. territory. Japan attacked all sorts of islands, U.S. territories in Asia. And still, when Roosevelt and when FDR and Eleanor made their speeches, they had to sort of round up Hawaii to make it more American. It was not yet a state till 1959, and sort of round down the Philippines and Guam and Marianas and other islands to make them more foreign and less American. Mm-hmm. The idea of being an island that's not a U.S. It's not U.S. territory. It's not part of our country. The idea that we would rally to defend them is a hard one to imagine.
Chris Roebling, where do you come down on this? I mean, would there be popular support for such an effort, or would there be a reemergence of an anti-war movement rather quickly? What is the national vital interest we have in defending Taiwan?
Well, the vital national interest that we have in defending Taiwan is really about maintaining a status quo that has been beneficial to all nations in the Western Pacific. And we need to have access to the Western Pacific, and China needs to stay where it is and not try to take over Taiwan. So I think what we are talking about here would engender an anti-war movement. There's no question that there's a group of people that will always be opposed to any assertion of American power overseas. I think that the responsibility of leaders, whether it's George Bush after 2000, after 9/11, or Franklin Roosevelt after Pearl Harbor, or even Joe Biden, should China move on Taiwan, the responsibility of leaders, look to Winston Churchill, look to the garnering of support and the building of understanding and the building of support for a policy that is going to uphold American interests and those of our allies.
Based on what we know now, if we were to look at a political rematch between Donald Trump and Joe Biden, and should this issue continue to bubble up, Professor, it seems to me that Joe Biden would be the person, because he said it as recently as a couple of weeks ago, that he would stand by Taiwan, and that Donald Trump, who when he ran in 2016 warned against unwanted wars across the world, and that Donald Trump conceivably could be the anti-war candidate based on what he has said in the past. Do you see that clear definition or not?
Build on the point that was just being raised, I fully agree that it's up to the president to be able to build that kind of support for an operation. I mean, to me, one of the best foreign policy presidents that we've had of past few generations was George H.W. Bush, and the effort that he made on James Baker to be able to build the coalition, oppose Iraq, and move them out of Kuwait. And that was indeed a case that was being able to sell to the American public. And it's a sales job to be able to sell, this is in our interest, we need to do this. This is, and as Bush said during his State of the Union address, it's more than just one small country. It's a big idea. And it really builds on these same notions that are being brought up with respect to Taiwan, Ukraine. And you would see that would be the kind of effort that have to be made. Having said that, I still don't see U.S. ground troops being used at all. I could see where the U.S. Navy might play a role. I can see where the U.S. Air Force would play a role. But I think that ultimately the support that would be given would be more on the support side. It would be providing arms, providing aid, very similar to what we're seeing with Ukraine. I think that there might be more calls for kind of a deterrent effect, because the reality is that if China were to try to do this, it would be in slow motion. It wouldn't be, with the exception of a bombardment. Obviously, if they were trying to bombard, that would be a different situation. However, I think if they were bombarding Taipei, that could actually lead to a huge international backlash against China that might actually make it easier to build up a coalition of support. But I think, in that kind of situation, even then it's going to be tough to get U.S. forces directly involved.
But what do we know, and this is really can be for anybody, what do we know about the U.S. forces that are in Japan, they're in Korea, South Korea, they're in the Philippines, they're in Guam? I mean, who knows on this panel what type of strength there is? I know one is sort of intelligence, right? I think Guam is intelligence. But Jennifer, do you have a comment on that?
Well, it's an arms race, really,
right?
China's been building a blue water navy for years now. It is an arms race in the Pacific.
Chris, do you have a thought on that?
Yeah, I mean,
what do we know about the rest of what's happening with U.S. troops in that region of the world? I mean, I've known about it for 50 years. I don't know what kind of military strength is there. What would they add to a war?
I agree with Professor Post that I'm not looking at. I do not think that we are going to see American troops on the ground in Taiwan. I think that we should be prepared for our fast attack, Los Angeles class and Virginia class, and maybe even some Ohio class submarines to eliminate a lot of Chinese naval assets literally in the first minutes. If there is any sort of immediate assault on Taiwan, I think that the United States Navy doctrine and what has been communicated publicly, and therefore what the Chinese are already taking into account, mm-hmm. is that a lot of their surface Navy vessels in the Western Pacific will be destroyed within the first 90 minutes of this conflict.
Mm-hmm. I want to get reaction from our other guests. We do have to pause. 1-800-723-8289 with a prediction from Chris Roebling that this would be primarily a Navy war involving China and Taiwan. Back shortly from Chicago, I'm Bruce Dumont.
Goodbye, bench press. Adios, squat rack. Fare thee well, kettlebell.
Hey, Kellen, need a spot?
No, Jake from State Farm. I'm just saying goodbye to my pricey gym membership.
What? Don't give up what you love. State Farm has options like insuring your home and ride with great rates on both.
Nice. Hey, can I buy you a protein shake or a granola bar?
For surprisingly great rates, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Call or go to statefarm.com for a quote today.
Going back to school as a working adult doesn't mean you have to sacrifice a high-quality education. Purdue University, a top 10 public university, took its innovative thinking to a new level when it created Purdue University Global for working adults. Discover innovative, practical ways to earn your degree online and advance your career. Purdue Global has already awarded more than 1 million credits for prior learning, which means you can save nearly half the cost of your bachelor's. See how close you are to finishing your degree at purdueglobal.edu. That's purdueglobal.edu. If you talk
at me, we'll hear you. We all want our kids to grow up safe and healthy. So we show them how. And we tell them with honest conversations that let them know what we expect. Not just one time, but every chance we get. That's especially important when it comes to alcohol and other drugs. Kids not only need to know the dangers and how to avoid them, they need to hear it often from you. And when it comes to pain medications, opioids, they need to know that they should never be taken without a prescription and never shared with friends or family. It's dangerous and illegal. So talk with your kids and guide them through the challenges of growing up safe and healthy. Because when you talk, they hear you. For more information about talking with your kids about underage use of alcohol and other drugs, visit underagedrinking.samhsa.gov. So talk.
Can do it if you try. This is the story of a very special woman. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician or an entrepreneur. Her knowledge was limitless and still is. She could also make monsters disappear, especially those that lurked in the shadows under the bed. Once, this woman put back together a teenage girl's broken heart, which had been shattered in 1,000 pieces, just by giving her a bear hug. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Bruce Dumont back. Thanks very much for joining us. Chris Roebling and Paul Post from the University of Chicago, and Jennifer Lind, also an instructor at the U of C, join us this evening, 1-800-723-8029. Chris and Professor Post will be with us for just one more segment, but I do want to ask, Chris, you mentioned in one of your earlier responses to a question, you brought up India. Now, where would India, you mentioned that India is or is about to be the largest, most populated country on Earth, a long-time democracy, where would they fit into a battle between China and Taiwan?
Well, I think India wants to avoid involvement in these so-called great power conflicts because India's got enough knitting with 1.4 billion people to worry about in India. Having said that, there is no question that there is a long time, as in millennia long, concerns in India about China and vice versa. And there is also a concerted effort as we speak by India, Japan, IMF, and World Bank to rescue Sri Lanka, which had fallen into the grip of China. So India knows on which side its bread is buttered and hopes for a better relationship with the United States and with the West. Mm-hmm. However, exigencies being what they are and resource requirements being what they are, India has been buying a lot of deeply discounted Russian coal and buys Russian oil. Mm-hmm. And India lives in the real world, not in a world of, you know, sort of ideals. Okay, so India would, I think, India, Australia, and the United States and Japan are working a lot more together about China, but I don't know that India would take on active arms. I will say India's Navy is arming to the teeth, especially in the area of drone technology, to defend against China because of China's aggressive tendencies and instincts.
Let's talk about what China's doing now, Professor, with their expansion from their home country around the world, whether it is in Africa, South America. Tell us a little bit more about how aggressive they have been in providing an economic branch, if you will, to Africa and South America and other places around the world.
Yeah, well, a key aspect of what you're talking about is the Belt and Road Initiative, and that has been a longstanding program to try to use development aid as a way to bring countries in the various regions that you referred to closer to China in China's orbit. And of course, this has also led to, indeed, the very situation Chris was just talking about with Sri Lanka is, of course, a part of this program. And this is indeed, what's been interesting when looking at what it's been doing, whether it's through the Belt and Road Initiative or other type programs, is how they've been trying to basically target countries that were not part of the traditional, if you will, liberal international order that we think of as the United States, that, you know, trying to engage more in Africa. And that was indeed a big part of the beginning of this program. But they've subsequently moved more into Latin America. And this has, of course, led to some tensions, needless to say, of the United States. Mm-hmm. And then even some members of the European Union, Italy being one example, Greece being another example, who have been taking on projects, Belt and Road Initiative. This has actually led the European Union to try to devise their own answer to this, mm-hmm. right? Now, of course, there already are some institutions that can answer to it. They're called the World Bank. They're called the IMF that was already brought up. But what's been interesting is the extent to which they have not been used to directly try to counter this program. But this is kind of the main program. This Belt and Road Initiative has been one of the main programs China's been using to try to have.
Do they have a blank check? I mean, literally, if the United States was trying to do this, and a lot of this sounds like things that the United States has been doing in the past, where obviously we're out passing out all kinds of billions of dollars to ingratiate ourselves with countries around the world. There's nothing new to that. But again, you know, when that happens in the United States, you go through a Congress and there's debate on it. But does China, do they have an unlimited amount of money to invest to ingratiate themselves around the world?
I think the short answer is no, they don't. And this is something they've acted like they do, but this is something that is now starting to get more attention. A lot of economists are pointing out more to the debt problem and the fact that China does actually have a substantial debt problem. And moreover, unlike the United States, where we have a major international reserve currency and most of the borrowing therefore, it can be easily financed by the United States. That's not the case with China. And so this is something where we've even seen this domestically in China, right, where some of these, you know, cities that were built, massive projects, infrastructure projects, have subsequently been torn down because they were built, they were financed, and there was nothing to that. And so I think that, no, there is not an unlimited ability of China to be able to do this. But they've been pushing those limits, and they've continued to push those limits, and the wall hasn't yet hit them with it. But I think it could, and this is something that I've been seeing some economists have been paying attention to.
Yeah. Now, I also noticed that Paraguay in South America, they've had an election, and one of the issues in the election was the ongoing presence and support of and for Taiwan. Now in doing that reading, I found out that Taiwan, which we mentioned, is not recognized by the United States. There's no diplomatic relations with Taiwan, but Taiwan only has 13 countries in the world where they have a diplomatic mission. Jennifer, they don't have a lot of friends out there.
They don't, in fact, and in a sense, economically, they have a lot of leverage. So in terms of security, they do. It is in our national interest not to have a war there, not to have China retake Taiwan. Yet, in terms of Paraguay, that brings up an interesting point. Paraguay is firmly in the Western Hemisphere, and our Monroe Doctrine, which is approaching its 200th anniversary this December 2nd, is still in full force. And China knows that. So this Belt and Road policy throughout Europe, reaching deep into Africa, the Middle East, and Asia, that's not the Belt
and the Monroe Doctrine, for people that may not know, give us a quick
1823. It's President Monroe gets his name on the doctrine. However, first of all, it wasn't a doctrine like we think of it today. It was a British idea proposed to our then Secretary of State, John Quincy Adams, because Britain was worried about European powers, Spain and France, acquiring new territories, new colonies in Latin America. So Britain said to the U.S., hey, let's have a joint declaration and tell our rivals on the continent to keep their hands off of Latin America. And the U.S. said, that's all right, we'll go solo. We'll do our own doctrine. Mm-hmm. But British, if you could please patrol it, because we didn't have a navy.
Chris Roebling, you're waving to get out.
I want to say I hope that Jennifer and I get to share a stage sometime, because I'm going to say the so-called Monroe Doctrine, and I agree with what she's pointing out, it was really a method of the Brits and the United States taking advantage of the heroism and the courage and the pluck of a guy named Simon Bolivar, who had just liberated, along with a bunch of other people, including a fascinating woman who really helped him be the liberator of the liberators. Anyway, Bolivar ran roughshod across Spain in Latin America in the early 19th century. And I agree with Jennifer, the Brits came along and sought to make the most of that. So I'm just going to take a look at a sort of a realpolitik view. I don't think that the Brits were really seeking to help the U.S. They were just trying to exploit what Bolivar had already accomplished.
Okay. Let's take a call. Jason in Northern California. Go ahead, Jason. You got a quick question.
Yeah. Hey, Bruce. I just want to make a comment, actually.
Sure.
You asked why the U.S. would potentially defend Taiwan, and something I didn't hear from anybody was the fact that Taiwan produces 90% of the world's advanced semiconductors. So basically most of our military advanced weaponry is somehow associated with Taiwan. Also, the other reason is that Taiwan would be a deep water port for China to control the Pacific. And the military recently, in the last 6 months, has been doing a lot of war games with AI and whatnot, mm-hmm. and different strategies. and the U.S. doesn't look good. Matter of fact, most of the war gaming that I've seen, U.S. loses three aircraft carriers, one in the first 24 hours. So it's I think there's a lot of reasons to.
That's a really important point. As I mentioned first early on in the program, the semiconductor industry that Taiwan has really built, they've really essentially put the reins in their own hands with this. And those matter from everything from our household appliances to the military and NASA.
So the answer to the question of what is it about Taiwan that we should be perhaps willing to fight for is Taiwan is an independent nation. It is filled with lots of very smart people who manufacture one of the basic elements of virtually anything that any industrial nation in the world needs to compete and to grow. And that's sort of we've saved that to the end of our at least brief conversation this evening. But that's a good answer to button it up. And thanks very much to you, Jason, for adding your thoughts on that. Paul Post, thank you very much for the University of Chicago. You've got to head off. Chris Roebling, thank you very much in Houston, Texas. We thank you very much. Jennifer, Linda, and I, we will continue and take calls at 1-800-723-8289.
At Jersey Mike's, you can elevate any sub by getting the juice. Red wine, vinegar, and an olive oil blend. It's how a Jersey Mike's sub gets its exquisite zing and how bites get boosted. The juice adds a certain something extra, an exclamation on top of the freshly sliced meats and toppings, the kind of exclamation you can eat. Order Jersey Mike's subs on our mobile app and get delivery right to your home or pick up from your nearest Jersey Mike's sub location. Jersey Mike's, be a sub above.
Song again. Here's that song again.
For the 100th time today.
Here's that song again.
It's gonna be stuck in your head all day.
Yay! Here's that song again. It will make you cray cray.
You love your kids enough to watch that TV show a bajillion times. Yay! Love them enough to make sure they're in the right car seat for their age and size. Show them you love them. Keep them safe. Visit nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably? It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp. I can probably hit the green from here. Probably. Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
I'll be here to hear what's on your mind.
Kids want to share what's going on in their lives with the adults around them. Parents, grandparents, teachers, coaches, and more. They want to know you're listening, and they want to listen to you. They want your input and guidance, early and often, on all kinds of topics. When it comes to a serious subject like underage drinking, they want to know your expectations, as well as how and why, as a young person, they should avoid alcohol. How you talk about it will change as your child grows. But the important thing is to talk about it. Not just once for an hour when you think the time is right, but in 60 one-minute conversations and more that are part of your everyday talks. For more information about talking with your kids about underage use of alcohol and other drugs, visit underagedrinking.samhsa.gov.
When you need me, I'll be by your side.
Bruce Dumont back on Beyond the Beltway. Fritz Goldman is here. He is our longtime producer and director. He's waving, and that's always a good sign that he's alive and well behind the board. And again, he's here every Sunday night with us, as well as yours truly. And Jennifer Lind and I, we have 30 minutes to talk politics, and the phone lines remain open at 1-800-723-8029. And I want to get back, since you were a member of the New Trier Township Democratic Party, I want to come back to how comfortable you are with your standard bearer being as old as he is.
I am less comfortable than I was a few years ago. I don't believe in age limits. I think that is undemocratic, just like I'm against term limits. But yes, I do. I am concerned not just for today, but to think ahead 6 years from now, to think a second term with President Biden. I do worry about his just his simple age, the ability to.
Do you, as part of that, do you also worry about the qualifications, but what we know already about the current vice president? I mean, would you feel comfortable her being a heartbeat away? You didn't, 4 years ago when you voted for her.
Right.
But, he's 4 years older now, and so is she, but I don't know whether she's got 4 years of credentials that would rally people towards her.
I do. I feel comfortable with her. I do support her. I think it's definitely vice president is a very hard job to ace. They say the spouse of the vice president is sort of a hard job to flub up, right? That her husband gets so much positive press, while she gets so much negative press. But looking at her qualifications, looking at her career in California, I do feel comfortable with her in many ways. Her background, her experience, yes, I do, actually. I think she does get a lot of bad press, but nevertheless, I feel comfortable with her.
Why is it that the Democrats don't appear to have a long bench for people ready to step up? What is your sense of that?
I've always sensed, and especially now, I think the Republicans have a much better knack for PR. I think they have a better knack for slogans. I think they have a better knack for publicity.
How about getting elected as governors?
Right.
I mean, that to me is, numero uno.
That's a good
other
point.
Other than the slogan.
That's a good point. But people like our Secretary of Commerce, Gina Raimondo, or Pete Buttigieg, who is younger, speaking of youth, and the governor of Colorado right now, I think we do have a bench, but we do need to do a better job at promoting that, at getting that out there.
But how would you, at this moment in time, there isn't any way that Kamala Harris could be pushed aside, is there, for the party to survive? I mean, to sack an incumbent African-American woman?
I think at this point we have to get behind both of them as the on our ticket. Yeah.
How do you do it? How do you do that?
Well, I think to play up to their strengths rather than to point fingers and just do a negative campaign. I think to play up to.
But what is her strength? I mean, when you look at 3.5 years of Kamala Harris. What is the strength? I mean, the positions that she's been given or jobs she's been given are not good jobs. I mean, no, they're similar to other gigs that vice presidents would have been given.
Right.
But I mean, one of the big ones is the southern border. And that I think is probably the single biggest albatross around this administration's neck, at least in my opinion.
Yeah.
And she's in charge of that.
Right. The southern border is always a tricky one. I think we know we need immigration. We need immigrants. We're a country of immigrants. And just for basic economic reasons, we need immigrants of all sorts. We need engineers from Southwest Asia, and we need farm workers from Latin America who come up into California. The answers aren't easy. They aren't obvious. But I do think she's I don't know that she's done any worse job than anyone else has. Not that that's not our benchmark for how we measure her. I think.
Well, how would you measure her against Dick Cheney?
Well,
night and day.
Well, yes, I simply agree with her views over Dick Cheney's views. I agree with the values and the ideals that Kamala Harris stands for, rather than the policies that Dick.
Do you believe, since abortion rights is has emerged as, you know, that's part of her sweet spot. Is the Democratic position on abortion, first of all, what is it? In your opinion, what's the Democratic position on abortion?
I noticed, first of all, that that is highlighted in President Biden's reelection video. The pro-choice stance is very much highlighted in the video, in the different marches.
What does pro-choice mean to you?
To me and to the Democratic Party, it means a phrase I think the Clintons captured best, although they got a lot of backlash for it, that abortion should be safe, legal, and rare. I think it means no one is in favor of abortion.
Some are.
I think there are some people in favor of it. Well, it saddens me to think of that.
Well,
I think
me too.
As opposed to in favor of the choice to have an abortion. I would not argue at the Democratic Party people are in favor of seeing more abortions as in have more abortions, but rather in keeping it legal as a choice.
But in the political discussion that's out there now at the state and the national level is affixing a number of weeks when a fetus is viable.
Yes.
So is that a legitimate, is that something that should be decided by states? The Supreme Court has said this is all about states. But, you know, ever since that happened in the last year, I mean, the states are now reacting in a variety of ways, some being very conservative, some being, you know, certainly more liberal and progressive. But what's the answer? Is it viable? Is it okay for a woman to have an abortion up until a week before a child is born?
Well, of course not. The answer is somewhat.
Of course not. But I don't know whether Democrats necessarily would respond as quickly as you did, which is fine.
I don't think I've heard a single elected or appointed Democrat say it's okay to abort a child up until a week before a child is born. I think a medical doctor can speak to the exact number of weeks when a child, an unborn child, is a viable child,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to a fetus or an embryo.
Right.
But I think the Democratic position is that women should have the right to choose to abort an unwanted pregnancy or a pregnancy for other health reasons up until a certain number of weeks, whether it's 12, whether it's 16, 18, whatever it is when an unborn child is a viable child. Absolutely. What I wish we had more discussion on is birth control, to limit unwanted pregnancies, that they should be safe, legal, and rare. I think that's really missing for the conversation. The idea that we would limit the right to the access to birth control is something I would strongly oppose.
Do you think the Republicans stand for that?
Some do, unfortunately.
But again, if you have some do, I mean, at what point do you look at the Republican Party and say, okay, this is a Republican Party. You live in New Trier Township.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of Republicans out there.
Mm-hmm.
At what point do you say the Republican who may be my next door neighbor or who I see at the local, ice cream shop at Homer's Ice Cream is someone that's okay with me, but the president seems to be focusing on MAGA Republicans. The only Republicans he tends to choose to talk about are those people, many of whom showed up on January 6th. And that's not the whole party. But he has whitewashed the entire Republican Party as all being MAGA Republicans. Is that fair?
Well, I don't see how he's whitewashed the Republican Party as all MAGA Republicans. In our district, the 9th District of Illinois, 68% of our district voted for Joe Biden. So that means about a third of our neighbors voted mm-hmm. for Trump. So I work hard not to point fingers at my neighbors, but rather to find compromise and build bridges. And I think one way we can do that is, for example, to avoid unwanted pregnancies and to avoid abortion in the first place. One thing I strongly oppose is Obamacare, which provides funding to women for birth control.
You oppose that.
I support that very much.
Sure,
to support Obamacare and to support funding for birth control so that we reduce the number of unwanted pregnancies and reduce the number of abortions women seek.
If a woman has made a choice to have a child and that child grows up and goes into the school system, does that woman carry with her the choice of how her child is educated.
Yes, of course.
And to those institutions that want to basically say that educators who are engaged in things that might be perceived as unpopular, they're not to be supported? Are they to be, because that's also mentioned in the announcement spot by the president.
Yes, I saw that.
You know, where do parents' rights come into this?
Well, they're directly right there, because the Board of Education, those board members are elected by the residents of the school district.
In most cases. Right.
And so the Board of Education is somewhere to really focus our attention. If we want to have a say and support how our schools are run, how the administrations are run, regarding the curriculum, what is taught, everything related to the schools, parents can attend those meetings, can vote. Every 2 years we vote for our Board of Education members. That is direct access and influence into how our schools serve our children, our students, and our community.
And if they make decisions about the teaching of sexual or related matters, that's okay? Or does it come back to the parent again?
Sex ed is an integral part of the curriculum, and that is set by the Board of Education. And again, those members are elected. They're not appointed. They are elected by the community.
We've got to pause. 1-800-723-8029. In our last segment tonight, we're talking with Jennifer Lynn. She is an instructor at the University of Chicago in Foreign Relations, and also she's active in the Nutrier Township Democratic Party. Amber Dumont, don't go away. One more segment coming up.
At Jersey Mike's, you can elevate any sub by getting the juice. Red wine, vinegar, and an olive oil blend. It's how a Jersey Mike's sub gets its exquisite zing and how bites get boosted. The juice adds a certain something extra, an exclamation on top of the freshly sliced meats and toppings. The kind of exclamation you can eat. Order Jersey Mike's subs on our mobile app and get delivery right to your home or pick up from your nearest Jersey Mike's sub location. Jersey Mike's, be a sub above.
The possibility of lung cancer can be pretty scary, especially if you're one of approximately 8 million current or former smokers at high risk. That's why SaveByTheScan.org wants you to know that now there's a breakthrough low-dose CT scan that can detect lung cancer early, and it only takes 60 seconds. You stop smoking, now start screening. For an easy quiz to see if you're eligible, visit SaveByTheScan.org. It could save your life. SaveByTheScan.org is brought to you by the American Lung Association's Lung Force Initiative and the Ad Council.
One in three adults has prediabetes. One in three. That means it could be you, your football buddy, your football buddy, or you, your best man, your worst man, you, your dog walker, your cat jogger. While one in three adults has prediabetes, with early diagnosis, prediabetes can be reversed. Take the risk test at doihaveprediabetes.org. That's doihaveprediabetes.org.
Wait, did they just say one in three adults has prediabetes? That's 33.33333% of adults. That means it could be me, my boss, or my boss's boss, or me, my favorite sister, or my other sister. That's seven members of my 21-person romantic book club. Wait, the one in three could be me, my karaoke partner Carol, or my karaoke enemy Jeff. I'm going to take the risk test at doihaveprediabetes.org.
Brought to you by the Ad Council and its pre-diabetes awareness partners.
It's a bully, but we aren't afraid of a fight. It's elusive, but our focus never fades. It's deadly, but we were born to defeat cancer. You may not have heard of us, but our work has helped millions impacted by cancer. We are the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society. We are leaders in advancing breakthroughs in immunotherapy, genomics, and personalized medicine. This research saves lives. After 65 years of fighting blood cancers, we've arrived at a game-changing belief. The cures for cancer are in our blood. The drugs and treatments we've developed for blood cancers have helped people affected by many different types of cancers. We are the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society. Beating cancer is in our blood. Learn more at lls.org.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Nice to have you with us this evening. We're talking with Jennifer Lind in our last half hour this evening. She is with the New Trier Democrats, and also she's a instructor at the University of Chicago. And she was invited to be a guest this evening because of her background and interest in study in foreign policy. So we'll continue that discussion now because there were a lot of things in the foreign policy area that we didn't really get into. And one of those is which is you said you referenced the Monroe Doctrine in the first 90 minutes of the program. And you think that China is trying to create its own version of the Monroe Doctrine. Why and how would it work?
Well, an easy way to think of that is when if you picture the global map, the U.S., really, its Monroe Doctrine covers Latin America. That we've basically said to any other country, hands off Latin America. We're safe with Canada to our north and Mexico to the south and the Atlantic and the Pacific. China is not the case, surrounded by neighbors and water and the oceans, but or the seas. When China wants to have its own safe corner of the world, it doesn't. It after the century of humiliation, it looks back at its history of being subjugated, being divided up by Western powers and Japan by with the 100 years of war. Mm-hmm. China now wants to feel safe in its own hemisphere, its own region of the world. In IR speak, you would say it's a regional hegemon, and it doesn't want to have to fear for its security by any of its neighbors. So Japan, Philippines, Vietnam, Australia, they need to choose. Are they with the U.S. or are they with China?
But realistically, none of the countries that you just named, none of them have the military strength to stand up to China if China invaded them, right?
Exactly. So they okay. need to side with one or the other, and they're siding with the United States,
okay.
which means letting us have bases and ports and military presence there.
Mm-hmm. And again, Chris Roebling was talking about India. Now, India now, according to him, is the largest democracy in the world. So, where largest country in the world? Where would you put them in the discussion?
Well, and they are indeed,
and they're not friends. They haven't been friends for a long time.
Right, and indeed, you're both correct. They're the largest country and the largest democracy.
Mm-hmm.
India is messy. Democracies are messy. It's much easier to rule, in a way, with an iron fist, right, mm-hmm. in China, who's, for example, the way they've controlled the Internet with a successful firewall to control 1 billion people. So I think India is trying to balance. India's sort of in this trying to navigate and thread the needle between what's going on with Russia, China, and the U.S.
Yeah.
India,
and they've got their focus on Pakistan. Is
right.
More of their,
both of
that,
them
that's
are,
more of their immediate security concern.
They are both nuclear powers, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And the global south doesn't quite have to choose like other countries have to in East Asia.
Now, you also referenced North Korea. Let's talk about where North Korea would fit into a possible conflict between China and Taiwan.
Well, North Korea, many say there are two or three, I would say, countries that are the least lucky in the world in terms of geography: Poland, Ukraine, and Korea. North Korea is stuck. They don't have a choice. Of course, our war never finished, right? It's been a no man's land. It's mm-hmm. been a truce. We have
right.
the demilitarized zone between North and South Korea. But North Korea shares a border with China. And the idea that China would allow North Korea to be free, to unite with South Korea, or to make peace agreements with democracies or its rivals is just not going to happen.
But North Korea wouldn't, I mean, North Korea would not be, that would not be a friendly takeover. That would be a hostile takeover. Wouldn't South Korea become more communistic than the other way around? I mean, it isn't likely that South Korea would defeat North Korea, is it?
No, not at all. And
okay,
China
so
would never
why
let
would
that
they,
happen.
Why would they? You know, why would China worry about North Korea in that respect?
Well, because the United States and the Western world, United States and Japan are close allies with South
okay.
Korea, and we have bases there. So China has to make sure that North Korea stays on its side and doesn't allow North Korea to unite or ever become free with
mm-hmm.
South Korea, because really to have a free, democratic, open country on its border would mean the beginning of the end for China. Similarly with Russia and Ukraine,
right?
A free NATO member on its border in Ukraine, the Ukraine-Russian border, could spell the beginning of the end for Putin.
Now, we've got about six minutes left in the program this evening. We've talked about China and all the publicity and focus on China and a little bit more about Taiwan. Why do you think that Taiwan has not been terribly aggressive in trying to raise their visibility so that they are garnering support from Americans? I mean, real, live, not diplomatic Americans, mm-hmm. that they may need someday in the future? Or are they, well, why do they do that? They don't seem to
invest much in raising
their visibility. I mean, a lot of people know about South Korea, mm-hmm. Philippines, but they don't know much about.
I suspect that Taiwan does, the government does. For example, the president of Taiwan just visited with Kevin McCarthy at the Reagan Library earlier this month. I think at high levels that political leaders, both elected and appointed, are working closely to support Taiwan. I think the short answer is because public opinion actually doesn't matter. I don't think that's the key question to ask. Whether or not Taiwan could build widespread public support in the U.S. or in the West to support and defend it from China, I don't think that public support matters. I think the leaders make the decisions in small groups and around their tables. Look what happened with Iraq. Huge global protests against Iraq.
So in your view, we shouldn't worry too much about China and Taiwan. It's not going to become a defining figure or issue in the next 25 years if you're living in the United States.
I think we should worry about China, who is now our peer competitor, who seeks to be a hegemon in Asia, if not a global hegemon and a competitor of the U.S. But I don't know that Taiwan is our worry.
But don't trust, but verify.
That's a good way to put it. Definitely.
On that note, our thanks to Jennifer Lind. She is an instructor in foreign policy at the University of Chicago, working out of the Gleacher Center in downtown Chicago, and also Professor Paul Post from the UFC joined us earlier in the broadcast, as well as Chris Roebling, international businessman and Republican commentator. Again, thanks to Fritz Coleman for his assistance in the production of this program. I'm Bruce Dumont. Good night from Chicago.
Going back to school as a working adult doesn't mean you have to sacrifice a high-quality education. Purdue University, a top 10 public university, took its innovative thinking to a new level when it created Purdue University Global for working adults. Discover innovative, practical ways to earn your degree online and advance your career. Purdue Global has already awarded more than 1 million credits for prior learning, which means you can save nearly half the cost of your bachelor's. See how close you are to finishing your degree at purdueglobal.edu. That's purdueglobal.edu.
Goodbye, bench press. Adios, squat rack. Fare thee well, kettlebell.
Hey, Kellen, need a spot?
No, Jake from State Farm. I'm just saying goodbye to my pricey gym membership.
What? Don't give up what you love. State Farm has options like insuring your home and ride with great rates on both.
Nice. Hey, can I buy you a protein shake or a granola bar? Or
for surprisingly great rates, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Call or go to statefarm.com for a quote today.
Is that a faucet running? That's not a faucet. That's a river rushing through the forest. Forest rivers provide over 100 million people with clean water to drink.
What? I can't hear you because of the vacuum.
That's not a vacuum. That's the trees in the forest cleaning up the air we breathe.
I didn't know the trees were so amazing.
Yep, and the forest gives us shade, trees to climb.
That's awesome. Let's go explore some more.
Visit the forest today and enjoy all it does just for you. To learn more about the forest and find one near you, go to discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
At Jersey Mike's, you can elevate any sub by getting the juice. Red wine, vinegar, and an olive oil blend. It's how a Jersey Mike's sub gets its exquisite zing and how bites get boosted. The juice adds a certain something extra. An exclamation on top of the freshly sliced meats and toppings. The kind of exclamation you can eat. Order Jersey Mike's subs on our mobile app and get delivery right to your home or pick up from your nearest Jersey Mike's sub location. Jersey Mike's, be a sub above.
If you talk and they will hear you.
We all want our kids to grow up safe and healthy. So we show them how. And we tell them with honest conversations that let them know what we expect. Not just one time, but every chance we get. That's especially important when it comes to alcohol and other drugs.
Kids not only need to know the dangers and how to avoid them, they need to hear it often from you. And when it comes to pain medications, opioids, they need to know that they should never be taken without a prescription and never shared with friends or family. It's dangerous and illegal. So talk with your kids and guide them through the challenges of growing up safe and healthy. Because when you talk, they hear you. For more information about talking with your kids about underage use of alcohol and other drugs, visit underagedrinking.samhsa.gov.
So talk, they hear you. You can do it if you try.